Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League. Oh, what a goal! It's Dele Rosalie's Premier League debut!
Got it lost under his feet, and it's come for Lamella!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. I am your host, Greg, and I am joined by our entire panel today to talk about what is a disappointing FA Cup final, to say the least. Let's get started with the sidekick of the podcast, the Tonto to my Lone Ranger. Ben, how are you doing today?
Not great. It's pretty sad to see our entire season indicted by one sloppy performance. I thought it was a good year, but apparently I was mistaken.
Are you regretting getting your Christian Eriksen tattoo on your face?
Never.
Never? You still? Barcelona through and
never.
Through?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm going to have to get rid of my Spurs tattoo and replace it with the Barcelona one this summer, but, you know, that's an easy fix.
Well, it'll get you into Qatar for free. That ought to be fun. Next up, we have our evil numbers wizard, Michael Cayley. Michael, how are you dealing with the loss?
I think I'm dealing with it okay, but like I'm worried about you because you have apparently switched up. You are now Greg, and you are not Skipjack when you introduced the podcast. And
yeah, we got rid of him. I was having lots of I was having identity crisis. So
this is Greg's face turn.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I just wanted to hang a lampshade on a major moment that happened on this podcast.
I want to eliminate the distance between the listeners and myself, and I felt like in the narrative structure of our podcast, we'd reached the appropriate point. So I wanted it to be a very natural experience. But it's fine. Criticism and bringing out the subtleties of Tottenham Hotspur and its fandom is what part of what this podcast is about. So I'm glad you
exactly as well as sort of indicting the listener in late capitalism, which I think that also achieves.
Yeah, exactly. And how their refusal to sort of take advantage of this system is sticking us with Kieran Trippier at right back. So that too.
Absolutely.
God damn it. Next up, coming to us live from the fun part of Korea, as we learned during our pre-show, we have Brian. Brian, how are you doing?
I'm just a little worried about what you being Greg means for the rest of us. Like, do we all have to start using our real names now?
Yes, Alex, we do.
Damn it.
I'm sorry, Hunming Brian. you're gonna have to start using your given name.
Sin Su Chu, thank you very much.
is it Brian Hunmin or is it?
Yeah, yes, okay. That's the preferred appellation.
Okay. The preferred appellation. Okay. Let's get into it now that we've moved past our meta commentary. This might be one of the weirdest high profile losses I've seen as a Spurs fan, which I think is saying quite a bit. Ben, as a launching point for our conversation, Jermaine Genus is, at least with some Chelsea, certainly with Chelsea fans and some neutrals that I've seen online, Jermaine Genus came under a lot of fire for sort of telling, I believe it was Lampard, on one of the post-game shows that Spurs dominated that match and deserved to win it. I'm not entirely certain if we deserve to win it, but I don't think his assertion that Spurs dominated the match can be completely dismissed out of hand. Do you?
No, not at all. I mean, I don't know that we deserve to win, but we certainly didn't deserve to concede 4 goals. That felt really freakish. It was a good performance. We controlled the match for large stretches, and it didn't really seem to matter because a bunch of dumb shit sort of happened. I mean, the penalty is like, if we're not playing our third choice left back, I guess, is that what Heung-Min's son is now? That probably doesn't happen. Nemanja Matic usually doesn't score 30-yard rockets off the underside of the crossbar. they had, I think, 5 shots on target and scored 4 goals.
And how many of those shots came after, you know, we pulled off Wanyama and, you know, went all attacking? Because I feel like at least 2 or 3 of them did. So it was frustrating.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, we've seen Spurs score 4 goals plenty of times this season, and that felt right. The Chelsea scoring 4 goals, this was not like a 4-goal performance out of them by any stretch. I mean, it happened and we lost. So, you know, do with that what you will. But I don't think anybody should feel like Spurs are shit, or, you know, that Chelsea are just a level we can't compete with.
Whoa, Ben, yeah. Come on. How long have you been a football fan?
Yeah, I mean, we're getting relegated next season, you know. I think that's a given.
I think and we went to administration today, actually. So, just, you know, we're definitely finishing behind Arsenal now, clearly.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to lose the rest of our matches and finish in 7th. So, it sucks, but what can you do?
I mean, I'm generally, I can definitely get down on my teams when they have a loss, especially one where it's a bit of a gut punch like this one was. But, you know, you look at why we lost this game, and it was a few individual mistakes and the fact that we were playing not our starting fullbacks. I mean, Michael, is this – I think I saw online, I want to say it was James York, who posted that, like, teams with the amount of shots Chelsea had that win this game, like, 1 in 500 times. I'm sure I'm getting that wrong, but – certainly the way
maybe score four. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That, I think that's what it was, but certainly I don't feel like this is a game that Spurs fans should feel bad about. Cause despite our mistakes, I mean, we aren't as bad as the scoreline indicated. Am I right? Or would you?
Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah. Fine. I mean, numbers haven't betrayed us.
Yeah. I mean, the Chelsea created, you know, very little in this game. You know, we had that breakdown where I think it was Toby passed it out to Jan and got intercepted, and Moussa Dembélé saved us from conceding a big chance. They had a couple of they had the breakaway that led to Toby's foul that led to a goal, but, like, you know, the Hazard goal was on a corner that bounced out to him and he put it through traffic.
Their first corner of the match.
Exactly. Like, and this is not to say that the main thing for me from this game, the other thing I would say is it's not like Spurs goals. You know, Harry Kane's first goal was completely insane. He could try that 100 times on training pitch. He might pull it off like twice. It's like impossible what he did. And then the cross that Eriksen put into Dele Alli was also impossible.
I think that one's a little more of a, like, it was excellent and very hard, but that one's a little bit more of a actual chance as far as I'm concerned. I agree.
It's a big scoring chance. I'm just saying that, like, the cross that he played to set it up is amazing.
Yeah, and I think he would hit that quite a bit if he did that 100 times in training.
Yeah, I think that, like, the big thing for me in this game, and the reason I think what Genius is saying has some sense to it but also doesn't quite capture it, is that Chelsea's back three were ridiculous.
Oh, David Luiz might have. I'm sure some Chelsea fan would correct me. I think he might have played the best game of his career.
Luiz played a basically perfect game, and both Azpilicueta and Ake were very, very good. Were excellent. We had a number of breaks through midfield, a number of very solid periods of extended deep possession, and everything always got broken up. We had playing long balls over the top from our back three the way we like to, and everything got broken up. And it wasn't, and so for the most part, like, our control of the match didn't turn into chances, didn't turn into shots because of how good Chelsea's back three were. So some degree, you, like, tip your cap to the back three. To some degree, the part of the game that gets played in midfield, we were the better team.
Yeah, and I mean, like I was saying, I can think of at least 3 times in that match, and there's probably more, honestly, where if Luiz doesn't make a perfect clearance, where he was probably close to conceding penalties on at least 2 of them, but didn't because he was so good. But if he doesn't make that clearance, then I don't know if it's a goal, but certainly someone's putting a very difficult to save shot on Courtois from very uncomfortable angles. It's just, I mean,
speaking of penalties, I think Dele Alli also had a pretty good penalty shout early in the second half.
Yes.
That would have been nice to get.
It looked like Kane was getting mugged at one point, but no one, I mean, they never showed a replay of it, so I'm guessing it looked, you know, it wasn't as bad as it looked, but I don't know. It just, this was, I think the thing that, and Brian, I'm not sure if you feel the same way, but what was frustrating to me is just that it, like, yes, we shot ourselves in the foot. Yes, some of our tactical decisions, like playing Son, came back to bite us in the ass. It would have been like, this wouldn't have felt so annoying if it just didn't feel so inevitably Chelsea. Like, I understand that exactly what Michael said. Like, their back line played a perfect game, or an almost perfect game. I mean, Chelsea did a lot of things really well. They seized their opportunities when they got them. Like, Willian made an amazing free kick. But at the same time, it just felt like so inevitably Chelsea that, like, you know, of course Willian scores on a free kick. Of course they score on their first corner of the match. Of course, like, Moses times his dive perfectly over Son's bad challenge, so he doesn't get, you know, so that part of it doesn't hurt him. It just felt like, and I know that, like, Hugo handled the ball outside the box. We scored two amazing goals. Like, a lot went Spurs' way in this game, too. But it just felt like things ridiculously went Chelsea's way in a very Chelsea way. And it just made the whole thing excruciating to watch.
I mean, I think the reality is that game probably ends 1-1 most of the time. We kind of lose an extra time when, you know, to Hazard's fresh legs. And it's kind of a boring match. And instead, it was like all the stupid things that could possibly happen happened, and just more stupid things happened for Chelsea. That's not really a good analysis, but that's how it felt.
I mean, Brian, did you think it was out of reach? I just felt like we were going to have a bad day at the office when Willian hit that free kick. I mean, I know that was like, that's a great position for a free kick, but still, how often do people actually hit free kicks?
I still felt like we were in it until the Hazard goal.
Oh, I thought we were in it. It just, I don't know. I felt like,
but yes, but yeah, I mean, when, you know, like when Toby gets booked for like his like 15th foul of the season and like what, maybe his second red card in the opening minutes of the match. And
then Alonso's committing murder like up and down the flank.
Yeah, and then they convert that free kick, and then you're just like, okay, you know, all right, we level it back up. Like, let's just make it into halftime at 1-1, or maybe see if we can get one before halftime, and then instead we concede a penalty, and we go into the half down 2-1. It's just like, you know, I didn't feel like we were ever out of it, but you're right. I mean, it absolutely did feel like the breaks were going Chelsea's way, and, I mean, I don't know what you can do when that sort of thing happens.
Well, one thing you might do is be smarter about the fullbacks you played. We did this game. We started this game with Heung-Min Son as a left wing back and Kieran Trippier on the right as a wing back. Now, I think if we're to give Poch credit, I think there's probably some level of tiredness with our starters, which would be Davies and Walker at this point, that played into those decisions. But I don't know. I can't help but feel like, I mean, we'll get to what I think this says about the team in a minute, but Ben, how costly was this for Spurs? I mean, we all know how we feel about Trippier. I don't think he was good. Son, Pochettino said with Son that the idea here was to pin Moses back defensively and just, you know, I think find a way to get Son in the lineup. I don't think that's a crazy decision, but I don't think it worked out either. I mean, how costly was our fullback pairing in this game?
I mean, immensely. You know, I think it seems pretty clear that he played Kieran Trippier because Trippier had started all the cup matches so far, and it was sort of a reward for doing that. And it was the wrong call. I mean, Kyle Walker is a much better player. You know, you're playing Chelsea. It's a cup semifinal. You play your best team.
You rest them against Palace if you need to rest them.
It's neat to see that Pochettino has a sentimental side, because we've normally seen him be like immensely ruthless with players who aren't that good. So I guess that's a positive. But the Sun thing, you know, it's both smart and stupid at the same time. I mean, the idea of either you pin Moses back or, you know, you overload that flank going forward if he's not playing defense, then, yeah, something good can happen for us. You know, Ben Davis hasn't been very good over this stretch where he's played for Danny Rose. I think, yeah, whatever. Nkudu, I think, was the right call if you're going to play an attacker as a wingback. I mean, his skill set just seems much more suited for that role. He's fast. He gets up and down the pitch. He works hard. He dribbles guys. You know, that's kind of what you want. Sun's best qualities are his off-the-ball stuff, you know, his ability to create chances for himself, his ability to move into space and get on the end of passes. None of these are things that you want your fullback to be doing in a match. And so other than Sun, you know, also being quick and having some good technique, like, it just didn't make sense that he was the guy because you're losing all of the things that make Sun really valuable. It's like you wouldn't play Chadley at wing back unless you're Tim Sherwood, you know, for the same reasons. It's just not where he's best at. But I think, you know, this gets sort of to a frustration I've had with Pochettino for a long time is, you know, we know Ben Davis isn't that good. We've had easy games where we could try something like this out, you know, either late in the game or from the off, you know, and just see if we can find something better within our squad. A semifinal against Chelsea is not really the first time you test that out. And so that was really what's frustrating to me is not so much that it happened. It's that why this of all games was it the first time that you thought, huh, maybe we could put a more attacking player at left wing back and see if that's better. You know, that's kind of maddening.
Yeah, I mean, if he's looking at the squad and saying, Davies hasn't been that good, Chelsea are going to test him, he's kind of tired too, we need to try something else, that's fine. I'm totally fine with that. And if he wanted to look at the squad and say, Nkudu is not experienced enough at what I want him to do as a left wing back for me to put him in against Chelsea, that's also fine too. But to say both of those things and then go to Son is a little more perplexing to me. I could see him being like, Nkudu's not ready, I got to start Davies anyway, or Davies is too gassed and I'm too worried about him against Chelsea in the first place, so let's play Nkudu. But just to go to Son, like you said, Son with very little experience in this system, it was, you know, we mostly got away with it. I think that's worth pointing out. Chelsea weren't creating a ton of chances, but the problem with putting a guy like Son in there is, like, he doesn't know how to tackle or play defense well enough against a guy like Moses. And I'll bet you that Davies, either A, for all his other faults, he's not putting himself in that situation, and B, if he is, I'll bet he can pull that tackle off in a way where he doesn't concede a penalty or is a lot less likely to concede a penalty.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, besides that penalty, Sung wasn't really bad as a wing back. You know, he wasn't great, but, you know, we weren't getting sliced open. And there were other options. Like, you could have brought in Vimmer and played Vertonghen as a wing back. You could have played a back four with Vertonghen as a left back. You know, there were other moves to make. So it wasn't just a binary between Sun and Nkudu, or I guess Sun and Ben Davis. You know, there were options. The big thing that kind of kills us with Sun is that, you know, we're now chasing the game and we have to bring Sun off to, like, fix our defense instead of being able to bring a guy like Heung-min Son on when we're desperate for, you know, an attacking impetus. Our bench is just not that deep. And when, you know, Chelsea's bringing on Eden Hazard and Diego Costa, and our response is, now we're going to bring on Nkudu and Kyle Walker, it's just, you know, there's not a lot of options we had to change things up or to really go for it.
Ben, are you saying that we need to be able to bring on a player who just would be able to devastate the second place team in the league, you know, just ruin their season at the last minute, like bring him off the bench? Is that the kind of player you think we need?
Yeah. I mean, if there was a guy who was capable of, like, in those high pressure situations, just destroying a really good team, despite all evidence to the contrary that he can't, you know, that might be a game for that kind of player.
The kind of guy who could, like, you know, play in a final of, like, a international tournament.
Yeah. You know, I mean, he might lose that international tournament, but, you know.
But, he was always player of the tournament. Maybe if we had that kind of player. Maybe if we had a scouting system, we could find that kind of player. You know, it would be really good if we had, you know, an Antoine Griezmann or something on the team.
Yeah. I mean, a guy like that would be worth at least £30 million.
At least £30 million, you know. Just, it would be so nice. I mean, Brian, does this? I have highlighted before that I don't think we're going after backup fullbacks this summer. I still think we don't, but I think it's a lot more likely after this game because I think it really highlighted the problems with. I mean, the problem isn't even necessarily with Davies and Trippier themselves. The problem is the way Spurs play, and the fact of the matter is that even past their defense faults, they just can't run like we need them to run so we can play like we want them to play. And do you think we're actually going to try and address this now? Because I think clearly there is a problem here, and this game, I can't think of a better game to sort of highlight it than this one.
I think the problem is there's not a lot of like wingbacks in the world, and there's also not because it is a slightly different skill set, and it is a Pochettino wingback is different than a wingback in Conte's system or a wingback in whoever else is running a back three. So I mean, yeah, do we need to do it? Sure. Do we need more athletic players that can play as, left and right wingbacks? Probably. Are we actually going to do that? Almost certainly not, no.
Michael, how do you feel about the Nkudu wingback experiment? Because I've been sort of impressed with almost all of his cameos this year. And it seems like every time we bring him in, that's what we're playing around with. And I don't know, maybe once he's had a full offseason to train there, that Pochettino is going to have a little more faith in the guy. But I guess as long as Davies is there, I'm not sure that's something we're going to do. I mean, I know we're dealing with a limited sample size here, but how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is one of those things where to some degree you're projecting onto a kid right now who's a relatively limited player. Nkudu works very hard. And he can dribble. He hasn't showed any particular end product. He hasn't showed any particular, great defensive capacity. And in order for him to be a good player for Spurs, either the end product needs to improve a lot, or he needs to show that he can play defense and play wingback. And so wingback becomes the idea because a lot of his other skills would fit. And you don't need quite as much of a sort of, pitch-perfect defender at wingback as you would at fullback. So it's imaginable. But I don't think we've seen much either way that would tell us it can happen. I guess the main thing that I would say is the fact that he's played there. He's gotten some minutes at wingback a couple of times. Not in this match. He only played on the wing. And was, again, sort of lots of industry, very little anything else. It could happen. And that means that Pochettino is trying it out. Pochettino is interested in this. This is a path to a useful George Kevin Nkudu career for Spurs. But we don't have much to go on.
I think the preseason will be surprisingly interesting in this regard. We see him tinker with that a lot in the preseason.
I want to talk about the fullbacks just again briefly. Sure. In terms of whether we need good backup fullbacks or wingbacks or not, I've been banging this drum for a long time that it's absolutely essential. And in a game like this, the tactical failings of our wingbacks, were exposed. We saw against Chelsea the last time we beat them. We had a lot of success finding Dele Alli in those pockets between the three center backs. Without wingbacks who can get high up the pitch and kind of stretch those gaps into wider spaces to attack through, it's easy for those three center backs to stay relatively compact and do what they did and cut out everything that we threw through them. It was like a three-man brick wall. If we had something just stretching them out a little bit more, like that chance that Eriksen created for Alli's goal, I mean, that's pretty much a carbon copy of the two chances that Alli scored in the first game against Chelsea when we beat them. The blueprint was there. We kind of knew how to approach that. And because of those fullbacks, it really, I think, specifically limited our ability in this match. to create those kind of attacking opportunities. And I think, you know, the other thing is we talk about backup fullbacks as if, you know, these guys are break glass in case of emergency. But the reality is these guys have played a ton of minutes across the season. You know, our Champions League campaign was a disaster. You know, we have a ton of rotation that happens for those games that requires fullbacks. Those are the players that put you to tends to rest the most because they have to work a lot. And, you know, there's so many minutes to go around that not having four fullbacks who can execute Pochettino's vision for the team is only going to mean we lose every other game against a decent opposition, potentially, when they have to play. I mean, it might not be that bleak, but, you know, the potential's there. It definitely hurts us. You know, I think one of the things that we've seen throughout the season is our first 11 is very good. Our squad isn't. And the more we have to rely on the squad, the more we suffer. And the better our squad players can be, the better we're going to be. And so when you look at this summer, you know, we don't need to replace Eriksen and Ali, hopefully, you know, Kane. Like, none of those guys, we don't really need, like, a star upgrade. What we need is as good as we can get to come off the bench and replace them as needed. So I don't know if we're going to do it, but I think if we're not, we're making a huge mistake.
Well put. And with us apparently going to be in the Champions League for 2 years in a row, I mean, this kind of thing is going to be more important than ever. So get on it, Spurs. I don't know. I agree with you, Ben. You've been sort of fucking this chicken for a while. And I think we've agreed with you for a while. But this is the first game where, I don't know, maybe because it's just the profile of the game, but watching it, I feel like the message might get through where I didn't really think it was going to get through before this. So I hope it does. Here's hoping it does, but who the hell knows? Especially given that we don't have to upgrade our first 11 that much. You would like to think they could devote those resources there, but I guess we will find out. Coming out of this game, it's worth pointing out that every one of our good players is suddenly tied to leaving the club, except for like Harry Kane and Hugo Lloris for some reason. Eriksen has been linked to Barcelona. Dele Alli has been linked to City and Madrid. Eric Dier keeps getting linked to Manchester City. Kyle Walker is apparently going to be poached by City now, and he's also allegedly mad that he wasn't started in the final. Brian, are we terrible and going to lose all our players now? FFS Levy.
I mean, obviously, yes. I mean, I don't know. It's interesting the stories that start circulating, you know, especially the Dele Alli stuff, because that seems to me to be the most believable. I don't have any reason to believe that City or anyone else is going to poach any of our fullbacks. If players are going to leave Spurs, they're going to leave for clubs not in England. There's absolutely no way that we're selling to any other domestic rivals. So, Dele Alli is the only one that even seems basically plausible because of his age, because of his quality, because he's Dele Alli. And everything else, I'm not really that concerned about. Not even the Eriksen to Barcelona rumors. I'm not. I think we're fine. Probably, maybe.
Ben, you're already changing your Spurs tattoos to Barcelona tattoos, right?
I'm gonna have to get a Barcelona tattoo and a Real Madrid tattoo for Ali. It's gonna be a little awkward, but I think I can make it work.
You gonna get them like on different arms so they don't see each other or something?
Yeah, I'll wear like a one sleeveless shirt, and I'll just have to remember which one to wear depending on, you know, which stadium I'm at.
There's going to be a certain segment of English fandom that's going to love these pictures of that American with their Barcelona Real Madrid tattoos. I don't know, Ben. Is it how much there do you think is here? Or is it just this is good clickbait and the buzzards are circling because Spurs had a particularly ugly high-profile loss that, like, if you look at it from a narrative point of view, like, reinforces their second-tier status? I'm doing that with air quotes, by the way, because it's a podcast and visual communication is such a great idea.
Yeah, it's not an accident that this is all coming out in the wake of a loss to Chelsea, that some people are trying to read as some indictment about you know, Tottenham isn't a good enough team. They don't, they bottle, I don't know what the fuck garbage slang that they use, but you know, there was a lot of narrative around this game going into it. It was, are Spurs really the best team in the league? You know, this is their chance to like lay a marker down. And you know, fuck that. Like, we've laid our marker down over the course of the season. We've been phenomenal. You know, there's no question about that. Losing to Chelsea in the way we did does not change that in the slightest. But, you know, that narrative obviously isn't going to stay. Are Spurs really the best team in the league after we lost to Chelsea? So, you know, they got to spin some other narrative about the club. And that is, oh, we're choke artists. Some things never change. Spurs are going to Spurs. And, you know, if we're not actually a very good team, then therefore all of our really good players must surely be going somewhere else. Because why would they stay at Lily Tottenham Hotspur? So it's a bunch of fucking garbage. I mean, teams should want our players because our players are very good. You know, that's going to happen. People are going to bid for Walker and Rose and Ali and Eriksen and whoever because they're really good and they're really key components to a really good team. You know, and that's all there is to it. I mean, we sign everybody to really long contracts. You know, people seem happy with the season regardless of this loss. You know, I don't see anyone going anywhere.
Michael, when you look at our team and the contracts we have, I think between those contracts, which I don't think anybody's coming up before 2019, which is Toby, and 2020 for most of them. But
yeah.
The thing about Spurs that I think is interesting is between the Premier League, like, sort of tax of a team, like, you know, a Spanish team coming in, and Daniel Levy being a pain in the ass, and those contracts, I'm looking at our team and I can see maybe two, maybe three players where someone's going to want to put up with all that. Like, it's worth their trouble to sort of deal with, like, pay that fee, deal with those negotiations to get that player, because a lot of our players aren't very, you know, sort of sexy. So when you're paying 60, 70 million pounds for a Christian Eriksen, as much as that might be worth the investment and a really good decision, that's might be kind of hard to sell to the fans and the team that he's going into. I mean, how many players do you think are going to be sort of worth that level of trouble? Maybe not this year, maybe not next year, maybe not in 2 years, but eventually. Because I think it's not that big.
I mean, even in a year, we're going to be looking at having to get new contracts signed so that the trouble can remain this large. You know, the contract right now, the trouble is large because the contracts are so long term. You know, just next year we've got to get Toby re-signed, or the trouble, I guess, which would be really trouble. So the time frame here is short, where we're in this good a position. It's hard to say what teams would want to. I mean, I think that like Barcelona should buy Christian Eriksen. I think that's pretty clear. I don't think it would be a bad idea for City to spend a lot of money on Kyle Walker or Danny Rose. That doesn't seem like a bad idea. I think Eric Dier would work for a lot of really good teams. You know, these aren't bad ideas. These players are really good, and their wages at Tottenham are less than their wages would be at other clubs, which to me is sort of the key issue here, which is that these players are not going to go anywhere unless they desperately want to.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Daniel Levy has any interest in taking even a good offer for pretty much any of his starting 11.
I think, and we haven't gotten any like confirmation of this, but just the way they talk, the way they act, and our experience with them, I would be shocked if any of our major players, if anyone leaves Tottenham Hotspur that we don't want to leave Tottenham Hotspur before the end of our first year in the new stadium. I think Levy is going to...
I would definitely take the other side of that bet.
Really?
That's a lot of people... And it's a lot of money.
I mean, I think
people should be honest about this. Like, you know, your current job, if someone came in and offered you twice as much, might you try to take that?
Oh, like, no,
probably.
I agree.
I mean, I can see why players want to stay. They're committed to the project. They really like it here. They are getting good money. They don't want to really make waves. Like, all of those things are reasons that I think it's reasonable that most players are going to want to stay. But I think that working out 100% for two off seasons, I would take the under on that.
I just think he is going to stonewall. I think he's going to want no high-profile defections before we play a game in the new stadium, because I think he's going to want the whole team. I think he's trying to send a message. Now, That I mean, said, look, you're right. If Bayern or Real Madrid like come in hard as a motherfucker for Dele Alli, maybe that'll change. But I think he's going to do everything he can to stop it, just so he has that prestige of I haven't lost anyone, and now I'm opening this big fancy new stadium. I think he's going to work. I wouldn't be shocked if that's the marker we're going to throw down, but life comes at you
first. I don't think the stadium has anything to do with it. That feels like a real red herring to me. The reality is he's going to want to keep our players because the players are good and the team is good, and that's good for Daniel Levy and Tottenham Hotspur. Regardless of what stadium we're playing in, you know, we want these players to stay, and Daniel Levy is a notorious hard ass. But if Real Madrid decides to make Dele Alli a $100 million offer, you know, even Daniel Levy is going to have to think about that, regardless of the stadium. It's just a lot of money coming to Spurs. There's a point where it's stupid not to take it.
Yes, and I guess the question becomes, which players are teams going to want to devote that money towards them? Because I just, for whatever, maybe just the way he's talked about, I just have a hard time seeing someone coming in with the money it's going to take to pry Christian Eriksen from our cold, dead hands.
I mean, if Barcelona offers $60 million for Christian Eriksen, you don't think they think about that?
I mean, we turned down $40 million for Modric a few years ago, and I understand that was an English team, and we're not selling anyone to Chelsea. I mean,
Modric was visibly one of the best midfielders in the world. Christian Eriksen is invisibly one of the best midfielders in the world. But
I think a lot of people, not like us as Spurs fans or intelligent football fans, but I think a lot of people didn't really get clued into Modric until Chelsea made that offer. I think he was still a little bit under the radar when Chelsea made that offer, even though he was obviously, you know, up there.
I think the Modric example is really good because it gets at why the issue isn't the other team committing the money. The issue is the player. And Luka Modric, he desperately wanted to leave. And the only way to keep him was to effectively promise we'd let him go the next season if we didn't get what we wanted. And so we did. Like, the issue is the relationship between the player and the team. Daniel Levy will keep these guys if they don't quit. But they might quit because they want more money. They want to go somewhere that is more likely to win trophies. They want to move on with their career, whatever it is. They want to go play in a different country. Any number of reasons. That's why Modric left. It's not, and the team's got to come in with the money for these guys. These guys are really good, and there's lots of money in football. I think that like the idea that teams aren't going to come in with the money for these guys is if they think that they've got a real shot at getting the guy to say if Barcelona thinks that Christian Eriksen is going to go to Daniel Levy and say I want to go. I think they'd be reasonably likely to come with the money for him. I think that right now they don't think that. They think he wouldn't say he wants to go, and then Levy would have the leverage to just reject offers. But the issue is the player.
Well, here's hoping they want to play in a shiny new stadium for the rest of their careers. But yeah, I don't know. I think
the Camp Nou, despite its name, isn't actually that new.
No. Good point, Ben. That's the kind of searing analysis you get on Wheeler Dealer Radio. That and hosts who burp into a live mic because they couldn't hit the mute button in time. So let's take some questions. Unless I'm missing anything, we have Palace coming up. Huh? What was that, Ben?
Does anybody have a bet on, you know, if someone's going to leave, who's it going to be?
This summer?
Sure. Or who will be the first one to leave, whether it's this summer or next?
Ooh. I don't know if Dele will be ready before, I don't know, Eriksen? If someone's going to go first, I think it'll be Eriksen.
Moussa Sissoko.
I'm most worried about Toby. Toby's contract is the one that gives where we're the weakest. We haven't re-signed him. He's old enough that he should be looking for his big payout payday now rather than plausibly delaying it like Dele Alli. He's what I'm worried about.
Ben.
I don't know. I was thinking Alli, but now I'm scared about Toby.
Allie's, I don't know, it's Allie's weird in that he's clearly like a superstar waiting to happen, but I feel like he's not the finished article yet, which is great. That's actually super exciting that a player this good isn't the finished article yet. And I think that's when a team's going to test our resolve.
I mean, he'll score 20 goals next season, and then he'll be Ronaldo's replacement at Real Madrid.
But I guess the strange thing, and I certainly see Dele going abroad more easily than I see Harry Kane, mostly because he doesn't, you know, look like someone just slapped him in the face. Yeah. But our English players, I always think it's a little strange, because obviously the teams that want those guys the most are your, you know, sort of Manchester United or Chelsea or City. Well, I guess especially City under Pep. But I see us really working very hard not to sell to any of those teams, even if they offer us stupid money. I can see us just not wanting to establish the precedent or make them stronger. And if we're not going to sell to those teams, I mean, Dele Alli will probably go to Real Madrid one day, but I don't know. It's just like I'm not sure if I see where any of these guys go overseas. Or it's like I see it being less definitive than I would if like this was 5 years ago and Manchester United came calling for Dele Alli. Like I think it would just be a matter of time. Then now I don't think we're selling
the country. And I think that definitely points to Eriksen and Toby being, you know, maybe more likely to go because they are foreign and probably have are more willing to move to Spain than most English players, and you know, maybe have more of an international market, but. Who knows? No one's ever leaving, so it doesn't matter.
That's an excellent point, Ben. We don't have to really worry about this because nobody's going anywhere.
Stupid conversation.
Ugh, yeah. Love talking about why are players going to leave Spurs. So we got some questions from our listeners. We're going to hit them up real quick. Brian,
do we want to talk about Palace?
I mean,
before I cut you off,
so everybody's gonna have probably watched Palace before. I mean, we're recording this on Tuesday night. I don't know. Does anyone have any thoughts? Big Sam has got Palace playing well. We're all worried about it. Chelsea aren't dropping points. I mean, I don't know. This is what's gonna be so fucking stressful about the stretch run. If we are actually thinking about a title, is we can't afford to slip up, and it's gonna be, you know, pretty hard to keep it together against the way this Palace team's been playing. I don't know. I mean, Brian, are you feeling confident going into this match tomorrow?
No, not particularly.
Now, is that for an actual reason or just because we're Spurs fans and we're trained to expect the worst?
No, I mean, yes to both. I mean, Big Sam has Crystal Palace playing, you know, okay. They've beaten Liverpool, Chelsea, and Arsenal, I believe, recently. You know, they've beaten some of the top clubs. You know, their defense has been solid. Christian Benteke looks like he was kind of the player that made himself worth the big move to Liverpool. Their midfield doesn't look as awful as it used to look under Alan Pardew. So, you know, they're a club that. They can get a result against big teams. Big Sam's a canny manager. He knows how to set up a team to get a result against a side that is going to come at him. He knows how to set up a team in a low block. He has the defenders to make that work. And, you know, a dropping points against Palace wouldn't be unprecedented. Everybody else has been doing it, so...
So once we get past Palace, we have to play the final North London derby at White Hart Lane. Michael, going into this game, I think there is absolutely nothing to suggest that Spurs shouldn't be the heavily favored favorite. I guess that didn't quite work. You know what I mean. There's nothing that shouldn't suggest that we're not going to win this game. It is an important match, both psychologically and in the title race. So I'm not feeling good about it because it feels like we're just primed to fuck it up because it is so important and we are in such a position to succeed. But I guess what I'm asking you is, when are you going to start serving Mai Tais on Sunday morning? Because I'm going to need to be heavily medicated before I watch this match.
No, I've got my rums ready and I'm going to make some fresh fresh Orzhat, so we'll be ready for that. I mean, Arsenal were pretty good in their semifinal against Man City. It was a weird Man City team; they didn't pressure them that well. But I think that a better attack, Man City's attack didn't click. I think a better attack could the spacing of that back three was funky at a lot of times. They don't look like they know what they're doing. But having Alexis Sanchez sort of in a roving role, sometimes on the other wing, and Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain as a wing back looks like a very dangerous attacking setup for Arsenal that I think very reasonably could give us some trouble, especially with Oxlade-Chamberlain on the right side, likely matched up against Ben Davis. That's not great. There are, I think, also tactical reasons to worry. Arsenal were in a slump. It's not that unreasonable that they would come out of that slump. They were a good but not as good as us team for most of the season. If Alexis Sanchez is starting to feel a little better and not be hurt, and they are, and they're trying out a few things that get at least the most out of Oxlade-Chamberlain, if nothing else, then they're going to be pretty good and they could win. That worries me. I think that coming into this saying that Arsenal are out of form and thus will definitely lose, I think is really overstating where they're at.
Okay, but we're going to win, right?
I don't know, 50% chance?
Oof. I'd really like to... What's the... I know we talk about this in the writer's room a bunch, which I'm sure our listeners love to hear about, but what is the point at which St. Totteringham's Day can't happen?
The magic number is 8. So that's 8 points taken by Spurs or dropped by Arsenal or some combination of the two. So if Spurs win their next two matches, that they clinch finishing above Arsenal. So conceivably that could happen. If Spurs win the next two matches, so conceivably that could happen at the Derby. Spurs beat Palace and then Spurs beat Arsenal, or Spurs beat Palace and Arsenal drop points. And any of those could lead to that happening at the Derby, which just adds extra stress.
So we could conceivably eliminate the possibility of St. Totteringham's Day by the end of Sunday.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I really want to win this match. Ben, how likely is a divorce in your household?
I mean, yeah, this game didn't need more fucking drama, right? I think if we lose, I will be single. But... if we win, my wife will handle that scenario much better than I would have in the alternative.
We're going to choose to say this says something good about women as opposed to Arsenal fans. So,
oh, definitely. Just something, a lot of things really bad about me.
Does your wife say blood or fam a lot?
Constantly.
Constantly. Is that weird for you? Is it a turn on?
It's definitely not a turn on.
You don't have, like, troops-related role play in your house, Ben? That's not going on?
I'll just leave that one to be imagination.
Okay.
picture Ben doing the troops look at the camera right now.
Wait, so who's Ben? Who's troops and who's Robbie in this scenario? Oh, it's all... I mean, there's so many possibilities.
She's troops and I'm troops' wife.
Yeah, that's first.
Obviously. I mean, who...
Come on, bud.
All right. thank you, fam.
That's right, bud.
Okay, let's get into some questions. Brian, we have one for you that is very important. This comes from P. Cray on Twitter. He wants to know, what is a better South Korean product, Eric Thames or Hunming Sun?
I'm pretty sure Eric Thames or Thames or however we're pronouncing this one's name. I'm pretty sure he's an American, so he doesn't count. So it has to be Hungmin Son.
I appreciate the clear answer. You didn't get tied up on that one at all. That's good. Nope. Work, Brian. Good work.
I'm not going to let these confusing questions tie me in knots. Screw you, Twitter.
Ben, our next question comes from Ben Kroll. He wants to know, would you rather us lose to Leicester, ending the title chase, or have to give your significant other complete access to your browser history?
Does this presuppose that like incognito mode doesn't exist?
I think it does.
Yeah. I mean, I do know how to use incognito mode, so that's nice. I mean, I got nothing to hide.
Really?
I'm an open book.
Is that a fact, fam?
Yes, blood. Are you kidding?
Do your ting. Michael, what would you choose in this scenario?
I have a lot to hide, so it's definitely it's definitely Spurs losing.
Just hardcore, filthy Eric Dyer Dele Alli fan fiction. Just, you know, disgusting.
Yeah, there's a lot of self-made art. There's a lot of
just interpretive dance pieces depicting it. It's all very uncomfortable.
Yep. No. Yeah. They're in my browser for some reason. I don't know.
Brian, do you? Yeah, they just appear there. It's really weird.
I didn't even know this existed. I had to create it myself. That it was in my browser. I mean,
guys.
It's a pop-up.
I write for the Economist and the Washington Post, and it's research. Their safe word has a number, and I do stats. Come on, it's obvious. Okay. Brian, what would you choose?
What was the alternative to the browser history
ending
again?
Ending our title chase by losing to Leicester.
Yeah, that's fine. We can lose to Leicester. I don't care.
Oh, what kind of sick filth is in your browser history?
Just, you know, perfectly normal Heung-min Son-related research.
Just lots of Anthony Bourdain specials, right?
Yeah. Look, no reservations and stuff. Yeah.
Okay. So our next question, I think, is the flip side of what we were talking about earlier. This comes from Drew Samuels. Ben, we'll start with you. What is the funniest summer departure from another Premier League club? Is it Alexis De Bayern? Is it Martial becoming a 30-goal scorer for PSG? Is it Ryan Mason to Sunderland? Create your own. What do you think the funniest summer transfer could be? Realistic summer transfer. I don't want to hear about like Alexis to like Hull.
Yeah, I mean, Alexis just leaving Arsenal for a bigger team, it's really hard to look past that. Especially because we'll get to watch Arsenal fans convince themselves that he was a locker room cancer and he needed to go and he wasn't actually pulling his weight and they'll be better off without him. It's really hard for me to look past that because those takes will be amazing.
I think that the answer here has to be Alexis to somebody. It's just what is the most hilarious destination?
I mean, Bayern, because they're going to lose to Bayern. Oh, never mind. They're not going to be in the Champions League next year. Never mind.
Michael, what is your funniest potential summer transfer?
Yeah, so I mean, Ben is obviously correct that it's Alexis because that's hilarious, but I do think that it is turned on my echo. I have to be careful with the Alexis, but I do think that it is pretty funny that there seems to be some problem with the Lukaku deal because like some of the money that Chelsea sends for Lukaku might go back to Chelsea as part of their sell on clause. And that's funny.
You think that holding up the deal would be funny or just the fact that Chelsea is sending money to themselves?
That Chelsea is buying Lukaku using their own and getting some of the money that they're using to buy him is funny.
I'm pretty sure I saw this in Boiler Room.
Yeah, exactly. There's a Lukaku bubble.
Is Lukaku how the next financial crisis starts?
There's actually 14 teams that have sell-on clauses on him. They've been tranched together, and no one actually knows who's servicing it at this point.
Quick, let's get like Chris Pratt like doing sit-ups to explain this to. That's how that works, right? Brian, what is your funniest summer transfer?
I mean, it's going to be, for me, other than Alexis, because that is obviously the funniest one, yes. It's going to be John Terry to whichever middling Premier League team he ends up going to. John Terry to West Brom, to Bournemouth, those are all going to be hilarious.
Which would be funnier, in theory? Would it be John Terry to, like, I say an MLS team, but, like, let's just say LA Galaxy? Or would it be John Terry to, like, whatever, like, garbage Premier League team that probably plays in an area that voted for Brexit?
It's much funnier for him to remain in the Premier League, but at a club of significantly lower stature. Because if he goes to MLS and, you know, latches on with, you know, LA Galaxy or some other reasonably competent MLS team, he'll be fine and he'll win trophies. But I would much prefer to witness him suffer in, you know, anonymity at, you know, West Brom for a season, but not West Brom because they play the exact kind of football that he would like succeed with. So like Bournemouth or
no. The best destination for John Terry is QPR.
Yeah, but I mean they're not going to get promoted, so it's not going to be. That's not nearly as fun.
You're underselling China here.
Ooh, John Terry and China.
I want to see his frustration like writ large across the Premier League, like on a weekly basis. Like if he just goes and hides in China, it's not going to be nearly as fun as is if he is, you know, suffering on a weekly basis for Newcastle. Like John Terry in a Newcastle shirt, you know, playing for Rafa Benitez would be just, yeah.
I don't know. I think that like things would happen or be said in China that would be pretty amusing.
We all think the old racist that's going to start a war in North Korea is Donald Trump, but surprise, it's John Terry.
I think Brett Rambo has an answer for us.
What do you think Brett Rambo is he? He's not on Twitter or any other form of social media, from what I hear. So how are you getting this message from Brett Rambo?
He sent me a friend request on LinkedIn that had a comment about how he wants to see Musa Sissoko wind up at Atlanta United. So I'm faced with seeing him every week in person.
That would be pretty great. Did he also thank you for adding you to his network?
No.
He didn't. Enigma. You can never predict Brett Rambo. Never predict Brett Rambo.
We certainly know you've tried.
I have, but alas, to no avail. Our final question, which comes from Haley Bachrock, she wants to know, why can't we have nice things? Ben?
We have nice things.
What nice things?
I refute the premise of your question. This season has been awesome. We have nice things. This is the best season anybody has ever experienced as a Spurs fan in the last 50 years, 60 years.
I don't know. You know what we don't have? We don't have an FA Cup trophy.
That's true. But I hear second place is like two trophies.
God damn it. Michael, why can't we have nice things?
Well, probably because of something you did.
It's entirely likely.
I mean, like... what was the thing I was going to say? I don't even know.
Man,
something about millennials and entitlement and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think you were going to say something about how MeUndies is the best place to find quality, breathable underwear.
Do you guys think that MeUndies is like a prank to get awkward podcast host to talk about underwear for 5 minutes?
I think it's a way to make crime podcast die as an art form. Because nothing
I'm just
is
waiting
worse
for
than
the
hearing,
day that
like,
you guys have to discuss them on your secret other podcast, Michael. So.
Yeah, I know.
Are you wearing the undies right now, Michael?
they're made of sustainably sourced moodle.
The expected comfort ratio is off the charts.
Yes. Yeah. That needs to be written into you guys' MeUndies promo.
We just recorded it right now.
Brian, how will Blue Apron help Spurs recover from this epic cup loss?
I don't understand why we don't have sponsors, guys. We're great at this.
We're bad enough at keeping listeners around. And on that note, for Ben Daniels, for Michael Cayley, for Brian, I am Greg. Come on, you Spurs.